Of Context, Caroline Casey, as we head into the unfurling conflagration in every world. So we resume our anarcho-entheo-astro-animism facing global conflagration with the strength of community to re-welcome Eddie Nix, one of my favorite radio dance partners, who plays a bookseller in real life and has many projects operating in the dream world. He is founder and operator of Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua, Wisconsin, yay, and was a founding teacher at Youth Initiative High School and has a radio show on community radio station WDRT, yay, every Sunday. He identifies as a rhizome or a verb, depending on circumstances. He has been many other things also. So we will be honoring ancestral mentors, David Graeber, Peter Lamborn Wilson, Kropotkin, many others that you'll bring in, the Discordians, Eris, Robert Anton Wilson, and the book of which we are particularly fond, Occult Features of Anarchism, by the living author Erica Lagalice, forward by Barbara Ehrenreich. Welcome, Eddie Nix.
Thank you, Caroline. It's just absolutely beautiful to be back on the radio with you.
I love this. And there's a lot before us. And ally Nancy Fisher, hello. I'm starting an astro mentoring council again. She is part of that. CoyoteNetworkNews.com, you can email us if you're interested. But she, this late-breaking ancient news, the full moon on the 13th, will occult Mars, right? We're going for occultism. Will occult Mars. It's a fabulous thing to see. In San Francisco, the moon occulting Mars, meaning covering it up, right? There's the moon and Mars, and the moon moves in front of Mars. This is beautiful and symbolic. At 5:58 p.m. in San Francisco, and it will stay. Mars will stay covered until 6:45 p.m. when it reemerges from the moon's, from the full moon's shadow. We go, oh, in Washington, D.C., it'll be 9:16 p.m. to 10:31 p.m. But so with astrology, with everything, really, remember, it's not what's going to happen, because certainty is a booby prize and there is none, but what's the assignment, right? And with astrology, it's, you know, what's the assignment? Like, I have some ancient old-time clients who are like, so change is going to happen to me. And it's like, no, change is the assignment. There we go. And it's not what's going to happen, but what's available with which to cooperate. So we put many things on our work table. So there is the conflagration in Southern California and everywhere in some form, but and late news just now from a friend on Facebook, Heather from Woodard J. The horrible, deeply dramatic news for anybody who cares about the preservation of the Theosophical heritage. I was just told that the entire property of the Theosophical Society in Altadena near Pasadena has been completely destroyed by the fires in Los Angeles. This was the world's largest archive of Theosophical materials, including a library with 40,000 titles, the entire archive of the history of the Theosophical Society, including 10,000 unpublished letters pertaining to HPB, the Mahatmas, W.K. Judge, Catherine Tingley, many people, membership records since 1875, art objects, countless other irreplaceable materials. The archives also contained works of Jacob Burma, Gichtel, donations from the King of Siam, rare Buddhist scriptures, and so on. The narrator says this is obviously just one part of a much larger drama for everyone that is currently unfolding, but one that deals a devastating blow to the modern study of esotericism and modern theosophy. It is hard to fathom, but it seems to be a true conflagration. So it's in keeping with everything we're talking about, right, Eddie Nix? And let me just slide in one other thing. What's the assignment? When the Bamiyan Buddhas were blown up by the Taliban, beautiful artifacts, you know, part of the Pluto part of all of us says, well, then may the blessing contained in those Buddhas be you know, wafted into the earth by the destruction of its form. And we might say that about the Theosophical Society. There's grief, but it's like, well, anything of value, may it waft forth. I don't know, do you have any response to this late-breaking modern ancient news here, Eddie Nix?
Wow, that's a seriously devastating thing to throw out, that just happened, and it's tragic. And as is the entire situation, I mean, but, you know, to see a little bit of America looking like Gaza maybe will be the kind of wake up that people need. And I think, yeah, shattering things into 1,000 pieces, at least back in the 60s, was a good idea, like the CIA. So who knows what time is coming and how things transform. And yeah, sometimes things transform through terrible destruction, whether it's willed or unwilled, or not much to say, except thinking about all those, you know, I work at the Historical Society in our little county here in Southwest Wisconsin. And, you know, just to think of the archives there, and that's nothing compared to what that building must have held. It is an elemental transformation, and, you know, there would be no alchemy without the fire. So,
right. The fire next time. The fire is here. And yes, I didn't say I noted but didn't say the thing that you just said, which is it looks like Gaza, right? Which is like, okay, right. So it's everywhere, and may the community of the grieving be united, you know. And something I think we want to address to put on our altar, in comments, people are like, oh, MAGA probably set these fires, or, you know, or or Gavin Newsom set the, whatever. It's like, no, we all did this. This is a result of humans having been very bad Earth citizens. And there's more unfurling. This is the gateway. This is welcome to 2025 unfurling before us. And I just wanted to tie it into, you know, our last show that we did together was on June 6, 2024, and it was on Israel's attack on the USS Liberty. Many things in notes that you can get at Visionary Activist Show Patreon. I'll put in Al Jazeera's report on that, and also in a link to that radio show. But on Blue Sky, which is okay, you know, I was saying, well, you know, the influence of AIPAC on the American government, you know, goes back to at least 1967 and before then, you know. And somebody said, well, you're either a tinfoil hat person or an anti-Semite. I'm like, no, these are just facts. And I noted there's a perfect and ironic symmetry, because part of that story of the Israel's attack on the USS Liberty, which is just a fact, you know, it's just a fact. It's a longer story. We did a whole show on it. But the Israeli prime minister threatened President Johnson at that time, who had spoken to Newsweek about the story. And the Israeli prime minister said to President Johnson, if you tell the truth about this, we will finish your political career by calling you an anti-Semite. And Johnson acquiesced. And then in a micro way, it's ironic that when I relate the story, these other people, and one person said, oh, you know, anti-Semite troll. No. Call the storyteller anti-Semite. We got to quit calling each other anti-Semites for bringing up facts, because there's a lot on our work table and ally etiquette. May we all expand our repertoire of responses over reactions, complexity and nuance. Being able to hold conflicting stories simultaneously is a necessary craft in navigating these wild oceans that we're all embarking on. And my brother-in-law, married to my oldest sister, was sitting beside Johnson when he got that call. I mean, I'm really right in there, and it's just again a fact. When the prime minister said, if you tell the truth, we will call you an anti-Semite and finish your political career. And as you know, we control you know, a third of the Electoral College. That this is where people were like, no, you're crazy. And it's like, this is what the Prime Minister said. And my brother-in-law was there. I have actual their person. It's just a fact. And I wanted to tie this in because another really interesting teammate, commentator, Alan Mizrahi, whom I will, yes, I got a note from a friend of his saying he wanted to be on radio. Yes, we'll do that. He's a complex, difficult, deep commentator. But his latest piece that I'll also post in notes on the Patreon thing, you know, is about what we, the American billionaire class, has gone to the Republicans. Not that, you know, he says the Dems supported Israeli's genocide and the whole military-industrial complex. You know, everything is out in the open now. But the reason that Netanyahu so wanted the Trump people to be in power is that his biggest, longest wet dream is to take on Iran. And so we want to put this, you know, addiction to having an enemy on our work table and bring in everything, you know, to whatever. And he said the Republicans can give Netanyahu the war. Democrats could not sell a big war, but the Republicans can. He said the Democrats could sell a genocide, but not the war. And says Netanyahu works his magic and sells war in Iran to the right wing, and chaos is the ally of tyranny. He finishes his essay again. I'll post it by saying, but the Christo-fascist crusaders, whatever, will crumble tragically and beautifully. I'm like, come back and tell that story. All right, anyway, so I just wanted to put that on our, you know, we're here also to go, there's a brewing war with Iran, that conflagration that's long brewing, and we want to, in every way possible, just suck the chi right out of that, you know, anyway, so I wanted to put that on our table. So, yes, and then, We can go anywhere. I have our scrambled notes, but let me just say also that in the astro part of our entheo astro animism, and I will be having James Fadiman on the radio in February, who has his book on microdosing, because I think the entheogens are very helpful, because, you know, right now any of the skills that we acquired by taking micro or macro doses is useful now. We're all tripping in some way, going whoa. And what we have before us, the Moon and Mercury, both quintile Saturn right now. So irresistible eloquence opens portals to wise leadership. I just wanted to put that on our table. Mars has a 135-degree angle to Saturn, which is, okay, humans, be aware of danger and then be eloquent to invite in what we need. So do you want to go with Eris and the Discordians and Robert Anton Wilson, or wherever you want to go in our gumbo?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, you know what? I'd like to immediately throw in the cauldron along with all the things that you invoked to try to put into the collective spell casting here of where we want to get to and get what we want to get rid of is believing so heavily in these narratives that we're all caught in, no matter what side of religion or politics or the social we find ourselves on. We're entrapped in our own echo chamber sort of narratives. And before you believe narratives, I think it's really important to, within yourself, bash that narrative to smithereen, or do your best to, right? What does everybody else think about this narrative that I believe in, and at least take that in, instead of, you know, I think most of our problems that at least you went through and described in the last little talk was, you know, things that if we only had a more nuanced view of these things, you know, if there were only more elements thrown into the pot as we stirred it, and based on what you were talking about, Eris, you know, for those of you who don't know, Eris is mythologically in the Greek the goddess of chaos and discord and strife and she's, you know, they throw the beginning of the Trojan War on her for starting it, because she threw out this beautiful apple, this golden apple that had written on it "to the most beautiful," and caused chaos with all the other goddesses. But what I always found interesting with Eris, besides the fact that she was the daughter of Nyx, N-Y-X, who is the mythological goddess of night and the sister of Ares, the god of war, who I think is a character we need to look into again, this knight character, the younger sister of Ares, of this, you know, the violent one. But, you know, Eris also, I think, to me at least, bringing up, you know, our ancestor gone, Robert Anton Wilson, who, you know, helped form this great sort of comic relief religion called Discordianism, which, you know, like most comic things, has a lot underneath it that needs to be explored. It's not just about laughing, it's what we're laughing at. But Discordianism, I think, you know, has the potential, because, you know, it appreciates chaos instead of being fearful of it. And with all these narratives, looking at the counter narrative that we're afraid of, instead of just knee-jerking be afraid of what's coming, what we think is coming, what we saw on the radio, what so-and-so read or said, look at it like, okay, can I allow myself to imagine 4 years from now where we have universal health care and the war in the Middle East has ended and, you know, government is one-third the size? I mean, can we allow ourselves to even imagine that? So I know that's dangerous territory, but I'll leave it with that.
No, it's the only safe boat in the sea. All right.
I don't know if I'd bet on that, but...
Well, in the animism, bringing the animism in, you know, I've been liking saying lately, who's a good chaos? Yes, you are. Yes, you are good chaos. Go over there to the Dementors and the Overlords, you know, go, there you go. Relate to everything. You know, who's a good economic collapse? Yes, you are. Go over to the polluting industries. There you go. Good economic collapse. You know, to with a trickster flair and spiraling. And Eris is an actual planetary body way out in the Kuiper Belt beyond Pluto. So I always tell people I'm doing readings for her going, so it's a little abstract, but anything for which we have a name, we have a relationship. So let's include Eris. Let's include all of the dark goddesses, because as Leonard Cohen sang when Trump was first elected, you wanted darker. And it's like, yeah, I guess we did. So let's go really darker. So I always look at Eris where she is. She's at 24 plus Aries. She will be exactly squaring the full moon on July 13th, 24 Cancer Capricorn. We go, okay. And, you know, what is her quality of disruption? What does she want to disrupt? The image for that degree is a double promise, having a feeling of promise, seeing the inner and outer implications of a situation, building up momentum, whirling around. So it says, well, let's disrupt anything in the way of kind of Sufic whirling, the inner circle, the outer periphery, you know, urge for freedom of action, right? Let's disrupt anything in the way of that. And then when we were brewing backstage, you know, I said, you know, that at the show after the election, I played Leonard Cohen's "You Want It Darker," right? So we do. You know, 1,000 candles lit for the help that never came. You extinguish the flame. You want it darker. We go, okay. So we're here to light the flame, you know. But I go, let's bring in the dark. Let's bring in Nyx. Let's bring in Eris. Let's bring in Dark Moon Lilith. Another. I am now including in all readings Eris and Dark Moon Lilith. She's at 21 Libra right now. She's on my Sun and Neptune. Dark Moon Lilith is not a body, which is why I'm like, whoa, what is that? But a welcome piece of vocabulary. She's the point where the moon would balance out if the moon's orbit were circular rather than elliptical. I go, okay, whatever. Let's bring her in. So Dark Moon Lilith, and she comes with a lot of company, right? Like, what's the positive dark? And from a lecture that I think I heard on KPFA decades ago by Chalmers Johnson, he was talking about the goddess Nemesis. And let's all be creatively suspicious, because Nemesis has come to mean enemy. But it's like, well, what is that reductionist sort of shallow take? Who is Nemesis? And Chalmers Johnson said, she's the goddess that brings down unjust empire and unjust fortune. We go, excellent. All right, so we're welcoming Eris, Dark Moon Lilith, Nemesis. You want it darker? We'll go darker. Trump's alleged sentencing is, you know, who knows, knock on wood, is tomorrow. So there's no punishment, but there is some Saturn accountability. And we do want to see this. You know, and when you said, can we dare to imagine? We go, well, yeah, all power to the imagination. And now we go back into our occult and esoteric studies, the power of imagination, and a fond farewell to the Theosophical Society archives in Altadena. The Theosophical Society in London was my home as a little tiny starting off occultist. So, yes, and then... Yes, all power to the imagination is the French situationist cri de coeur in 1968. So we're there now. And then do you want to bring in, all right, bring in our esteemed ancestor, Robert Anton Wilson, and all power to the imagination, and wherever you want to go.
Well, I'll say just as a little shout out, there's a brilliant new biography of Robert Anton Wilson that just came out. This awesome young guy named Gabriel Kennedy, and it's called Chapel Perilous, the lives and thought crimes of Robert Anton Wilson. And it's absolutely brilliant. It's just he spent so much time interviewing people and doing the research, really doing the research in the archives and uncovering stuff that no one knew about, his FBI records, his, you know, just, so it's a great book. And, you know, Bob was always just, you know, humor was what, you know, everybody wondered, is this guy a philosopher or a comedian? And he was both. And that was kind of what allowed him, even in his later ages, when he could barely sit in the wheelchair, you know, after taking some, you know, THC cookie backstage and giving his, you know, one of his last, you know, talks. He was always able to engage in humor, and I think that really is the best medicine that we always have in our little inside psychic pouch, you know. And don't be afraid of humor, and the irony, that's humor too. And it takes a certain amount of humor to be able to see irony, and it's potent medicine both for yourself and for somehow demystifying some of these, you know, the intellectual quagmires we've gotten ourselves into. You know, it's almost like we're at a place where we have to question meaning again, you know, with all of these things coming down on us and all of this kind of a little bit doom feeling. You know, teleology is another word we need to throw back into our backpack, you know, yeah, just, you know, teleos.
No, what is
gold,
it? What is it?
But that's not, well, it's like, you know, is there meaning? You know, the question of whether creatures and our existence and anything has meaning. And I think that, you know, if we don't, we went through the death of God, we've all experienced sort of the meaninglessness of society and of life in terms of how, you know, society looks at it. But if we don't have meaning, we don't have the possibility of ethics and morals, which kind of may be able to rebuild whatever society we envision in the future. But, you know, besides humor, I think bringing up our other Wilson brother, Peter Lamborn Wilson, who, you know, is very close to this esoteric idea of activism, or as we like to say, the occult roots of anarchism, and And as we talked about in the last time, I've been really into this idea most of my life of how to bring those two sides of life together, you know, because so rarely do we see activists who are active spiritually, at least on some magical level. And the same thing otherwise, you know, we the spiritual people don't really seem to be so political. Yet we have so many ancestors that we've kind of written off because we think that anarchism kind of starts from the Greeks and then, you know, ends up in the Enlightenment. Nothing really happened in between. But, you know, if we adjust our vocabulary, because the movements that were Christian in the Middle Ages and the 1600s and the 1700s, they were using a different vocabulary to talk about freedom. They had to use the vocabulary of the church. It was the all-encompassing sort of like, you know, meme going around. So they had to use that language, but it's still a language of liberation. And there's a huge, great history that we can look back on as our ancestors in this struggle, you know, to regain our humanity. You know, but I think progress is one of the places where the brick wall comes up, because as long as we continue thinking about progress, I think it was the thing that really, you know, has hampered most movements, because they you know, and we've only begun to realize that the earth is finite. We can't really keep progress going. And, you know, the conquest of nature, even that was up till the 19th century and through the 19th century, that was sort of the overriding idea that, and we're still trapped in that with the corporate outlook. Even if we look at, you know, you brought up the healthcare industry, and regardless of how anybody thinks about, you know, offing a CEO, I think it's super important to look at how that industry works, because it's like the perfect example of capitalism gone wrong, or as Peter Wilson would call it, technopathocracy, right? Rule by a sick machine. And that's one of the reasons, that's one of the examples of how to at least wrap our heads around what we're up against, this sick machine that is actually controlling us, whether it's the AI bombs falling in Gaza, you know, because the humans have run out of intelligence for targets. So the AI spits out 100 places to drop bombs and they flawlessly drop the bombs. You know, it's like Ouspensky when he was on the front lines of World War One, and he's watching, you know, legs, artificial legs going out by the truckload, you know, every day, and seeing soldiers come back without legs and realizing this is the physics of war. This is the horror of the situation. Healthcare is a perfect example of that.
Right. We're going to take a musical break in a minute or so-ish, but there's so much that you're putting forth there that we will tease and spiral. Humor. you said irony, again, the magic word, irony. The study that said to the degree to which we are ironic is the degree to which we can have compassion. I love that because it's unexpected. To be ironic requires holding at least two stories at once, what is and what should be, right? That we really want to work that one. And what is and what people are pretending it is, right? Also important. So, and then compassion is the capacity to hold more and more stories all at once, you know, complexity and nuance. You know, we're going to head into a song, since we want to avert the planned war with Iran, you know, wherever there's too much Mars, and Mars being occulted by the coming full moon, which is great. We go to the Venus of that culture. So we have a beautiful Persian piece to play for our break music. And it's from Ally, was sent to me by Ally, now ancestor, alas, Marianne Mui. It's called Niaz, and it's composed by Azam Ali of the beloved 11th century Persian poet Bab Taher. So complexity of rhythm, complexity of rhythm, and the Venus to avert the Mars. So here's our break music, Niaz. That is the beautiful sound of Niaz. It is Persian, composed by three Persian allies, based on the poetry by beloved 11th century Persian poet Baba Tahir. So wherever there's Mars, and remember Mars will be occulted on the full moon on Monday night, we can see it. You know, it's for those on the West Coast, you can see the moon occulting Mars from 5:58 p.m. to 6:45 p.m. West Coast time. So the moon in Cancer, the concern for all life, occulting Mars, the inappropriate use of Mars, and we go to the Venus, the beautiful poetry of Persia and the culture of Persia, to avert what the Dementors have planned, which is the war on Iran. And using all of our skills to do that. So, yes, this is the Visionary Activist Show. Here you are. My wonderful guest is Eddie Nix, and we are doing our, you know, the brew of anarcho-entheo-astro-animism facing the global conflagration with the strength of community. Because what I wrote last night is, because, you know, when people were saying, you know, somebody set these fires, it's like, no, we all did. We all set these fires, you know. And there's 11 more days of sane enough, you know, responsive leadership guidance, you know, to respond, not adequate for what we've set in motion, but still caring, you know, and then after that, after 11 days, it's just us. It's just community. And that's why I was so enthused to have our anarcho conversation, Eddie Nix, you know, about community, you know, leadership arising from community and the importance of horizontal organizing you know, which David Graeber is so ardent about, rather than vertical, right, to embody democracy. And I love one of the blurbs that David Graeber wrote about Occult Features of Anarchism, this wonderful, wonderful book by Erica Lagalese. He says, "This is surely the most creative and exciting and possibly the most important work to come out on either anarchism and occultism in many a year. It should give rise to a whole new field of intellectual study," said David Graeber. All honor be upon him. We go, yeah, no, I'm going to spend the winter going over this book, and all, and Kropotkin, and, you know, and Peter Langbourne Wilson, and yes, Robert Anton Wilson, all of our mentors, you know, to, you know, our guides about the power of community, you know. And when you said, you know, it's been a false division between political activism and the whole realm of magic, and I go, not over here. It's been the whole point of this show for 28 years, but the whole point of my life since I discovered it. And starting off as an occult person, and then encountering, thanks to Kenneth Baker and Tonya Baker in Rhode Island, they turned me on to the whole realm of anarchism. And I go, of course they go together. Of course they go together. And I do a little shout out to Bioneers, where I was presenting for 20 years, and youth would come up to me going, "We have pagans, you know, and activists, and they're kind of at war with each other in the young people group, but you can put it together." I'm going, yes, I will. So I was honored to be invited in as a mentor to brew, right, participatory magic with participatory activism as the sine qua non of trickster medicine, because it makes everything else possible. And I love the Thai saying, excuse me, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism, right? The loss of animism, which we say it's not a belief, it's just good manners, you know, is a sign of colonized mind. So we're all deconditioning, right? And you said, you know, complexity and nuance, you know, and, you know, talking to wonderful Deborah Falmouth about Syria, it's like complexity and nuance. People go, oh, yay, Assad's gone. We go, yay-ish, yeah, right? But, you know, Bibi's taken, invading the Golan Heights. Now we're back to 1967 again. And, you know, women in Syria are like, what will a fundamentalist Islamic regime do for complexity, right? So we're here to honor complexity and nuance and activism and magic and Peter Lamborn Wilson and the language of liberation. So yeah, we're in accord on that, and it hums in us. So again, you know, wherever you, I'm tossing this multidimensional ball back to you, Eddie Nix, wherever you want to go with it.
Yeah, well, you know, just speaking on the what you said about Graeber's book and horizontal as opposed to vertical organization,
yeah.
I think that's a super important concept. And to take it into the animist realm, I guess, if you will, we can look at it like rhizomes versus arborescent root structures. So you have a tree. It's a one thing. It's a tree. It has a root system that goes down. You know, and yes, redwoods are an exception, but that's the opposite of quack grass, which is a rhizome, which spreads horizontally everywhere. And no matter how many times you try to dig it up, a little tiny piece of it will stay, and that will reproduce the entire thing. And I think that's why we have to go back into our roots and explore these, you know, whether it's people from the 60s or people from the 1600s, what their ideas were, what their solutions were, if it's animism, if it's Ludditism, if it's the Illuminati. I mean, we are talking backstage about Adam Weishaupt, the founder of the Illuminati in 1776, an interesting date in history. But when he started that, he wanted to take down kings, take down the Pope, and take down bankers. I mean, that was the agenda, and it really was a liberatory idea. And people like Goethe and Mozart and Schiller were part of the Illuminati, the Bavarian Illuminati, which, you know, of course, was part of the Masonic milieu, and that in itself is something we have to challenge our beliefs in. Is Masonic things evil and bad, or is Masonic thing stupid and boring and something your grandpa did? Or is it something that, like, well, we could go down to the lodge down the street and take it over with 10 guys and, you know, start having raves in the lodge hall. And that's what we did here in southwest Wisconsin at the Masonic Lodge. So these things are mediums. You know, there's no black and white Cartesian good and evil. They're just mediums on which to play and explore and use the imagination. And I think, you know, Hermeticism, if we go back to Hermeticism and how that, of course, had to emerge back from the Islamic cultures and back from the East to come back to the West. But when we found it, it was the science of imagination. It was taking the word and the image and creating that magic. And who is the heir to Hermeticism now? It's the advertisers. They've taken that magic and used it against us. You know, so how do we go against that magic? Well, perhaps we have to just turn it off, you know, and maybe not turn it off completely, but turn it off for 10 minutes instead of 20 minutes when you're scrolling through the doom, you know, on your social media or the echo chamber of your social media, which is just as bad, I think. You know, if we're going to Blue Sky to be with our people and we're just constantly reinforcing narratives without the ability of anyone to question them. And the same thing on Twitter or whatever.
Yeah, no, but I sort of want to throw anything repetitive into the cauldron. So it is a wrap that Blue Sky is an echo chamber, is said mostly by right-wing outsiders. And there's a little bit, but again, complexity and nuance. There's good information, there's good conversation, there's, you know, however we Saturn, what is our vetting standards, you know, our inner dedication strengthens our outer signal, you know, what do we want to be connected to? But, and I just wanted to chime in on the Masonic Temple. Yeah, the one of the best astrology conferences I ever went to was the NCGR conference in Baltimore, where the hotel that was used was the previous Masonic Lodge. And so there was all the paintings and powerful symbols, and it was like they were alive. That was great. George Washington and his 12 generals were Masons, right? I mean, it's part of the root. But I just want to underline what you were saying and toss it back to you to repeat. You know, we were conditioned, or the right wing was like, oh, the Illuminati, you know, is sort of like the, controllers. And it's like, no, it starts off, you know, as you say, in 1776, you know, to bring down tyranny. And I love Native American or indigenous person recently saying anarchism is to question authority. Indigenuity is that nature is the only authority. And we go, right, yes, that's true and good. But again, complexity, nuance to guide us out of reactivity, you know, in this wild time. But yes, and then I interrupted you because I had to chime in. But wherever you were going,
we'd be remiss if we didn't invoke John Trudell's, you know, spirit, who was a great radio man and hero of all things, you know, radical. And he's, you know, of course, said that the U.S. government doesn't feed us. Mother Earth feeds us. Like, figure that out, folks. You know, but Robert Anton Wilson used to say that the Illuminati is, think of yourself and your 10 best friends. And that's so true. You know, we have to sort of reoccupy these sort of old forms, you know, that have been left to us. If we can't have the ingenuity and imagination to create new forms, let's at least appropriate the old forms that are still there. It's beautiful. If you ever drive across the country, and it's one of the most beautiful things about America, in my opinion, is in any little small town, you can roll through the downtown and it might be only 10 buildings and they're old and they're 100 years old. And you can look up at the top and check and you'll see the Masonic Lodge, and you'll also see the Oddfellows Lodge, you know, which is the three links and the handshake. But you'll also see the Masonic symbol, and you can very easily pick these out in every town, you know. And more than likely, that's an empty place. And it's the most like beautiful place in left in town, you know, and it's just a sad sort of reminiscence on that entire history. Of course, there's still good Mason lodges and there's still bad Mason lodges, you know. Look at Propaganda Du, you know, which was called P2, this Italian Masonic lodge that basically infiltrated all of the Italian government and had everybody blackmailed and was running all the drug money through all their banks. And, you know, there's very evil things that happen under the guise of Masonry or any of these, you know, secret societies. But it is also the foundation for which any kind of resistance happens. So, you know, go figure.
Yes. Complexity, complex musical rhythms, complex thinking rhythms, right? And let's go back to the Kabbalah, the liberating part of Jewish mysticism that, you know, just again wafts through everything and is in friendly terms with Ifah, you know, and just the basic thing. The Kabbalists said, if the divine is everything, how does the divine create using only that within itself? And the Kabbalists said, well, how do we humans create using nothing outside ourselves? And they said, in our imagination. So when it says we are made in the image of the divine, it doesn't mean we're old white guys with beards. It means we are dreamed up by the divine, and our capacity to imagine and to dream is the participatory divine part of us to dream the world into being. And they say, you know, a clear mental image tends to materialize as an actual condition or event. So team, you know, again, we critique and notice danger and threat, and then we simultaneously envision the desirable as part of, you know, Robert Anton Wilson and Peter Langborn, you know, and I mean, everybody, you know, all of that, which is, you know, critique and imaginative blessing in some crucial form as part of our dynamic, and that's our language as well. So, yes, I'm not fond of the word resistance because it's a losing move in Aikido. You know, he who it says don't block, don't resist, guide.
Yeah.
Who's a good chaos over here? So no blocking, no resistance. You know, releasing resistance to and then guiding the whole thing. And same with progressive, right? You know, progressive is kind of linear, straight ahead, thum, 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 thum. So we just want to decolonize our language and make it unexpected. And you've been talking about some of the youth which you are, you know, connected, being drawn to orthodox things as a kind of rebellion, you know, but it's a theme in the world, right? And orthodox, ortho means straight, right? Like orthodontist, straight teeth. Orthodox means straight teaching. Now we're back to Black Moon Lilith. We want our teaching curvy, thank you very much. The reason Lilith was dismissed as the partner of Adam is that she wanted to make love on top. And they're like, no women should make love on top. Go away. We will make Eve, who's more compliant. Anyway, so it's all relevant now since we've elected the Inquisition. You know, but we call back these things. So, and then one other thing, and then let me toss it to you. So Mars in Cancer, it's going on a vision quest. It will be occulted by the full moon on the 13th. We get to see that. It's pretty cool. Mars in Cancer, the protector. I'm grateful to Standing Rock for switching out the word protester, which comes from protestes. Protester, no. We are protectors. Much more. And Mars is going back to retrieve that. And it's also in the sign of Cancer, which is associated with history. History is the womb of time. So kind of like what we're doing, we're going backwards in time, our own personal history and cultural history, to like, where is some positive guiding to us now in this conflagration? How can we protect as much life as possible? And how can we organize community support to take care of everyone with kindness, you know? So that's why I so want to keep our conversation going, Eddie Nix, and delighted to have you here now, because it's the thing that what am I most enthused about, you know, what do we need now? It's like, so there are no trustworthy leaders at the moment. You know, so it is community. We're back to this, and you know, where I'd always felt that spiritual magic and activism and anarchism went together, is it requires each person doing some self-responsible cultivation. And if each person does that, then the community, everyone comes into accord, like, well, yes, that's what we should all do. And taking our guidance from nature and participating the whole community, not just of humans, of course. But that. So back to orthodoxy. What is the black pill and the blue pill? What are you concerned about orthodoxy in as a thing that's alluring to young people now?
Yeah, so you know, a friend of mine, her son who is 16, you know, going through his own rebellion at that age, like every kid does, found Orthodox Christianity by spending way too much time in some really deep rabbit holes on the internet and exploring what's called the black pill, which I really won't get into because I don't understand it so much, but it's kind of a antidote to the idea of a red pill, blue pill, you know, wake up or not. It's kind of a nihilistic idea, but there have been in the last, you know, couple years, this real resurgence of young men going to Orthodox Christian churches, you know, which I think is great. I think, you know, and it's interesting, you know, it's I hadn't really looked into it except looking at the history of the church itself and the importance of the, you know, what's called the Byzantine Empire, which is another modern construct by classicists and Byzantinists, but that's, you know, different. But yeah, this return to some sort of, and they're looking for an authority figure. They're looking for, you know, as you said, that straight line, which of course we can't find in the universe, a straight line. But, you know, nevertheless, yes, the sort that, you know, so I think it's, if nothing else, it's very interesting to sort of reflect upon. And I've been looking into, you know, what is the Orthodox Church and checking out these ceremonies, these services, and it's you know, you stand for 2 hours. It's kind of like the, you know, the masculine version of what they would consider a feminized Christianity and Protestantism. So there's definitely that kind of anti-woke sentiment running through a little bit of that. Why young men are maybe embracing that kind of faith. But in terms of antidotes, as you were talking about, you know, I think one thing that's really important that I always try to keep in mind is this idea of immediatism, which is another Peter Lamborn Wilson, AKA Joaquin Bay, you know, invention, which is an idea that we have all these things standing in between us, mediating our experience, whether it's with nature, with another person. I'm on the phone to you. I'm not looking at you. I'm not holding your hand, right? I'm not seeing the sweat drip off your, yeah. Well, everything's standing in between. So trying to, on every level, remove the mediation, everything that's standing in between us and experience as a whole. You know, immediate experience, what's real. And I think you can apply that all across the board, but I suppose I'd throw that out as my my card in the game.
So, yeah, I go back to my anarchist mentors back in the 70s in Providence, Rhode Island, you know, and they turned me on to so much great literature, and we to and fro'd occult and political, and where they Venn diagrammed together and in us. So Walter Benjamin was a great Jewish intellectual who was hounded by the Nazis until he killed himself in the late 30s. But he wrote this fantastic essay pertinent to us, right? We're delving into history called The Work of Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction. And you were touching on this with AI. And there was a recent study, neurological study, that when we look at actual art, the original thing, when we stand in front of a real painting, our brain is has a kind of orgasm of vitality and neurological pathways. When we look at a reproduction, a poster, it's deadening, right? And so this is what my mentors taught me. And what Walter Benjamin says in the 1930s, this incredibly great essay, he said, the work of art in the age of mechanical reproduction, when we look at a reproduction of art, it strips away its aura, it strips away its Venus intimacy. You know, it's the toxic mimic of the real thing. And this isn't to nuance and complexity to not have reproductions, although I have friends who will have no reproduced art in their, only original art in their house, you know, and good luck on that. That's good, you know, but to know that the real thing, and you know, when you talk about the youth turning to, you know, orthodoxy, and I go back to my friend Josh Barron running a group a million years ago in Berkeley called Sorting It Out for people leaving different cults, Christian Church, Steve Gaskin's Farm, Swami Muktananda. We had the tyrannical dirt on all of those organizations, and all these people understood that what got them into a cult was a good thing, right? Let the occult help people out of the occult, was a good thing, a desire for community. But then it was an outsourcing of autonomy, and it was the toxic mimic, became the toxic mimic of community. And they had certain, you know, they all shared certain things, like here's the warning signs, right? And for us now, you know, we've elected an Inquisition and a cult. Oh, this is an ongoing conversation. We're on our way, almost out, but let me give you, do you have a last blessing, Eddie Nix? And again, the keeper of the most wonderful bookstore in the world, Driftless Books. Do you have any last little quick blessing, woof, that you want to say?
In good times, you're a Taoist. In bad times, you're a Buddhist. And in old age, you are a Confucius. So
okay,
hopefully we're both getting into our Confucian period and, you know, getting past those other.
Oh, I hope not. I'm not big on Confucius, but we're always animists all the time, especially a wonderful board op, Kirsten Thomas. Thank you so much, Eddie Nix. Let's keep this conversation going. All these many things that are really one thing, and may it hum the entheo anarchist animist in everyone's heart now. And may we all take care of each other. Yes, all right. More soon, later, everyone. CoyoteNetworkNews.com or Patreon Visionary Activist Show. We will reconvene next week. Thank you, team.
Be listening to music right now, something chill like jazz or something fun like funk.
No, we need to dive into some real talk, like current events, politics, deep discussions that actually matter, man. Come on.
But sometimes you just need to relax, you know?
And sometimes you need to engage your brain, dude.
Wait, doesn't KPFA do both? Music and talk, like all in one place?
Yep. News, culture, beats that make you move. Problem solved.
KPFA, where music and talk live side by side. Tune in at 94.1 FM or stream online. KPFA, your station, your community.
People who can believe that I was happy on the levee picking cotton, or happy in the mines digging coal, and giving all this away to other people for their wealth, and unable to protect my house, my woman, my children. Are people who can believe that I did this out of love for other people, and that I was happy doing it, and that all those songs and dances I learned while I was doing it meant that I was happy, can believe anything?
James Baldwin, a voice synonymous with passion, integrity, and vision. No other station has been playing voices like these except KPFA.
You're listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, 94.3 K232FZ in Monterey, and online worldwide at KPFA.